This is Morgan Beatty speaking for Alka-Seltzer, bringing you news of the world. Tonight, Paris, one week of grace for the Kremlin. London, Bevin speaks matter-of-factly about war. Cross-country, Dewey demands European Federation, Truman ribs congressional mossbacks. Baton Rouge, a fair play legislature. Chicago, advice about the weather, wrapped up in a brief message from Jack Holden.
And we have it wrapped up, Morgan. You know, friends, it may seem a day too late to most of us, but today, the 22nd of September, is officially the first day of fall. And when fall comes, we start thinking about the cooler weather, changeable weather ahead. And that's often cold-catching weather. Now, just in case you're unlucky and you have an early fall cold, listen to the Alka-Seltzer ABC Cold Comfort Treatment. Then try it and see how much better it helps you feel. Here it is. A, Alka-Seltzer. Take Alka-Seltzer at once for fast relief from the ache all over feverish misery of a cold. B, be wise. Beware of drafts. Be sure to get more rest than usual. And C, comfort. Yes, comfort the sore throat caused by your cold. Gargle with Alka-Seltzer. Dissolve 2 Alka-Seltzer tablets in a quarter glass of warm water and use this as a soothing, pleasant gargle. Now, Alka-Seltzer is such a good product for cold discomfort and for headache and acid indigestion, too, that no home should ever be without it. When you go to your drugstore, buy 2 packages of Alka-Seltzer instead of 1 and always keep an extra package on hand. Now, Alka-Seltzer brings you the noted commentator, author, and reporter, Morgan Beatty.
In Britain today, Foreign Secretary Ernest Bevin revealed to the House of Commons that France, Britain, and the United States are now morally bound together against the aggression of Soviet Russia in what amounts to a defensive alliance in fact, if not in name. In Paris, the 3 governments agreed to give the Kremlin one more chance to avert a complete break. These are decisive commitments in the West, so for the story, we cross the Atlantic recorded at once to France and Britain. First, Henry Cassidy in Paris.
The European diplomats who prefer to handle Russia gently have won the upper hand so far in the discussion of what to do about the blockade of Berlin. The American proposal to bring the blockade before the United Nations has been abandoned, at least for the time being, and a new note has been sent to Moscow, keeping alive the negotiations between East and West. This is what the British and French wanted, and the United States has relented in its determination to force Russia to the wall of world opinion. The new note was drafted this morning by the Committee of Ambassadors from London. It was reviewed this afternoon by the envoys from Moscow. It's going to the Russians through the normal diplomatic channel of the Soviet embassies, and it asks for a firm yes or no on four-power control of Berlin. The Western powers agreed on this final approach to Moscow because they have pledged themselves to exhaust every possible diplomatic means of settling the Berlin crisis, and also because they realize the United Nations could only produce a long, painful debate. When the Russian reply has been received, the foreign ministers will meet here with a full array of their advisors from Berlin, Moscow, London, and Washington to decide what again to do next. No one here is willing tonight to predict what the Russian reply will be. The record of the many previous notes and conferences is not encouraging, but the Russians have always been unpredictable. In any case, they have been given another chance. But however it turns out, the Western powers have not relaxed in their determination to remain in Berlin. They will stay until they assure peace is secure and the Germans can govern themselves freely. This is Henry Cassidy in Paris.
Britain completes the international report. Here's Merrill Muller in London.
To an impatient but acquiescent House of Commons, Foreign Secretary Ernest Bevin tonight made Berlin the symbol of democracy's stand against the spread of communism and warned other measures would be taken by the Russians to weaken the joint policy of the Western powers, but it does not involve a commitment to war yet. Bevin delivered more than an hour's lecture to a packed Commons which interrupted him only twice and later expressed agreement with his efforts. He reversed Britain's stand against partition of Palestine by wholeheartedly supporting the Bernadotte plan, provided the Arab sector might go to Transjordan. He had to explain to a question that this did not include recognition of Israel. But on the Berlin crisis, Bevin delivered some of the weightiest policy remarks of the post-war period, comparing present conditions to 1940 and drawing a parallel between the demands of communism and Nazism. He said the Western powers had made provision to save Berlin from a vicious scheme by Russia. It was a grave choice to stand firm or go south to another Munich, he added. Berlin has become the democratic salient, and Bevin is confident the growing airlift can supply it throughout the winter. There will be quite a number of maneuvers to upset us, Bevin continued. We have to make our position firm and clear. This clarification, hidden in Bevin's speech, is actually the four-point text of the note to Moscow, which the Western foreign ministers drafted in Paris last night and ordered their deputies to dispatch today. As Bevin said, first, the Western powers insist on the lifting of the Berlin blockade as recognition of their rights. Second, they will accept four-power control of Soviet money in Berlin. Third, they want four-power control on Berlin's trade with the West. And fourth, there is only next week left for settlement before the Western powers act. This is Merrill Muller in London.
And now, here's the political campaign in the United States today by candidates, by datelines, and by satellites. Candidate Dewey at Albuquerque, New Mexico, spoke on inflation at home and peace in the world. On the cost of living, he said, the Democratic administrations for years have been moving heaven and earth to bring on the present inflation. We can lick the problem by cutting down on every available dollar of government spending and by maintaining a substantial surplus of government revenues. National income is now at such high levels that we can build up our military strength, reduce our debt, and still see to it that taxes are less of a burden on our people and less of a throttle to their enterprise. On foreign affairs, the governor said, America's number one domestic problem is world peace. He renewed his call for a federation of Western European nations as a keystone for prevention of another world war. The United States, he adds, has a magnificent opportunity to aid in the creation of such a federation. Candidate Truman at Sparks and Reno, Nevada, played a variation on his favorite campaign theme, the 80th Congress. He asked the voters to fire the 80th Congress because it was led by a bunch of old mossbacks. Otherwise, he added, a Republican victory would return to control the Wolcotts, the Tabors, and the Allens and the Martins. These are the chairmen of the most powerful committees in the House of Representatives, and the president asked his listeners to give him a Congress he can work with. He told the crowds that the Republicans want to set up a ruling class in America. The campaign, he thought, is between people who want to turn the clock back and people who have your interests at heart. Mr. Truman said the Republican campaigners had not told the voters where they stood exactly. But he added, everybody knows where I stand. You don't get any double talk from me. In St. Louis, William Green of the AFL renewed his attack on Senator Robert Taft of Ohio for intervening with the National Labor Relations Board. The senators, you may recall, had called a conference with the board to discuss the case against the printers' union under the Taft-Hartley law. Today, Mr. Green called this outright intimidation, and after that conference, he said the board cracked down on the printers' union. Candidate Alvin W. Barkley at Bridgeport, Connecticut, tonight, will ask labor to get out a big vote to strike down a growing threat to progress and liberalism. Labor, he will say, has too much at stake not to turn out in an unprecedented array. Not since the labor movement came of age, he said, under the administration of Franklin D. Roosevelt, have the rights and privileges of labor been so threatened. The Republican Party, he added, is still the party of Harding, Coolidge, and Hoover. In Washington, Attorney General Tom Clark fired back at the House Un-American Activities Committee. Some people, he told the American Hotel Association, have tried to make the welkin ring with all sorts of weird communist spy stories. These stories are as preposterous as to allege that all our hotels are harboring spies under the beds in every one of their rooms. The Attorney General reviewed the President's loyalty program. He flung a challenge to the administration critics. Repeatedly, he said, I have asked them to name any communist in the executive branch of the government. Up to now, I have not received one name from them. I have told the House Un-American Activities Committee, he went on, that there are some 3,400 deportable, undesirable aliens walking the streets of America because there is no law to keep them in custody pending receipt of their travel papers. The FBI, said the Attorney General, is working day and night on our internal security. You know and I know that the FBI gets results. We have the fifth column on the run in the United States. Now, a new angle in the Democratic Party triangle. The story by Bob Scare, station WJBO in Baton Rouge.
Political big doings continue in Louisiana tonight. There's never a dull moment in the Bayou State, but this time the repercussions will go beyond the state boundaries and echo all the way to our nation's capital. Earl Long, brother of the late Kingfish Huey and Louisiana's governor of just 4 months, has called an emergency session of the state legislature for the announced purpose of putting the names of Harry S. Truman and Alvin Barkley back on Louisiana's Democratic primary ballot. The names of the president and his running mate were stricken from the ballot recently, and those of state's writers Strom Thurmond and Fielding voting rights substituted in an unprecedented move by the State Central Committee, the official Democratic Party in Louisiana. Governor Long said today from his mansion that he is for states' rights and against the FEPC, that he feared it would place the state in an improper light if the voters were not allowed to make their own choice at the polls. But the law will have to be amended in order to make a place for both states' rights and Democratic nominees on the ballot, thus the call for the special session slated for 10 o'clock tonight in the towering $5 million capital that Huey Long built. However, keen political observers are noting with raised eyebrows the timing of the arrival in Washington of Huey's 29-year-old son, Russell Long, newly elected to Congress. Has Russell, they say, already cast a long political shadow with the Democratic bigwigs, or is his appearance on a house hunting trip merely a coincidence? This is Bob Scarce in Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Now, around the world in a minute and a half by Datelines. Washington. The House Un-American Activities Committee received important testimony today on its atomic spy case from witness Samuel J. Novick of New York. He's president of the Electronics Corporation of America. The testimony was taken in secret, but after it was over, acting committee chairman McDowell said Mr. Novick had answered all questions. He had given highly important corroborative evidence, but said Mr. McDowell, I would not call the witness friendly. Mr. Novick told the committee he was not a communist. Miami, Florida. The hurricane has spun its way through the rich Everglades vegetable belt and the fabulous citrus groves of the Indian River District of Florida. At noon, it veered northeastward and passed out into the Atlantic at Jensen Beach. Behind it are destructive tailwinds. Fruit and vegetable crop damage is expected to run into the millions. The storm to date has claimed 8 lives, 6 in Cuba, 2 in Florida. Baseball, the Braves today delayed their first pennant in 34 years. They upped and lost to the St. Louis Cardinals 8-2. That moves St. Louis into second place 7 games behind. If the Braves had won, they would have also won their pennant. Ah, well, tomorrow's another day. Pittsburgh 5, Brooklyn 1. The Cubs won twice over the Giants 3-2, 11-7. American League, daylight game, one of them. Detroit 5, Athletics 1. Lefty Hal Newhouser's victory, his 19th. One more, and he'll have 4 20-win seasons under his major league belt. And that's what happened around the world today.
Morgan Beatty will return with some more late news. Going out tonight, maybe to a movie or an evening's visit with some friends, late hours and late refreshments could cause distress in the form of a headache and acid indigestion tomorrow morning, you know. So look into that supply of Alka-Seltzer before you go. Alka-Seltzer's pain-relieving agent can make quick work of that headache while its alkalizing properties help soothe and settle an acid stomach upset both at the same time. Get Alka-Seltzer at any drugstore.
Don't take chances. Are you sure you're getting all the essential vitamins you need from the food you eat? Remember this. Government surveys show that the meals of 3 out of 4 persons are short on vitamins. Don't take chances. Instead, take one-a-day brand multiple vitamins. Lack of vitamins in your food can cause you to feel under par and run down. So take one-a-day brand multiple vitamins. 60 capsules, 2 months supply, only $2 at any drugstore. Potency guaranteed by Miles Laboratories. Lack of vitamins in your food can keep you from feeling your best and looking your best. You can't afford to take chances. Take one-a-day brand multiple vitamin capsules.
Now, here again is Morgan Beatty.
And here's a sign of our times. Belgrade, Yugoslavia. They're even converting pigs to communism in Yugoslavia. It's this way. 2 weeks ago, the Tito government sent squads of officers through the country. They rounded up most of the pig population of the country from the peasants' farms. They paid the peasants 10% of the going value of the pigs per pound. This, said the government, was necessary to ensure an adequate supply of food for the country's industrial workers, and the pigs were herded into government pig pens. Came the question what to do next. The communist newspaper Borba reports today that the government has found the answer about what to do next. It's going into the business of raising, fattening, and selling pigs. All pigs henceforth will be turned over to the authorities, even pigs owned by state farms and some cooperatives. It will be against the law for a private farmer to own a pig or for anybody else, as far as that goes. The burden of providing pork chops for the nation will therefore henceforth be the government's business. So, from now on, the Yugoslavians will in fact be buying a pig in a poke, and that's the news of the world. Until tomorrow at the same time, this is Morgan Beatty speaking for Alka-Seltzer, saying goodbye from the newsroom in Washington.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.